Let's try one more. One, two, three.
It sounded equally as bad, so...
It did.
I feel like you're good there. I feel like that evens out.
It's probably fine.
Although, I guess, is... John, are you editing this week? It's your call.
Yeah, I can do it. I can do it.
I believe in you.
Yeah, me too. I think I'm working from home on Monday, too, so...
Nice.
They'll tell me... At some point. Hello and welcome to episode the 278th of the internet's one and only podcast about comic books. You are listening to the Comics Podcast. I'm your host, Jean-Luc. We are going to talk about comics this episode, so you'll have that to look forward to. I'm joined, as always, by Chad.
I think I'm overcomplicating this painting. I'm looking at another model, and I'm trying too hard. I need to try less hard.
Really? I mean, don't you
want
your...
That's my motto.
Do you want your miniatures to look really good?
Yeah, but I don't want them to look cluttered, and I think I got too many colors going on in the armor. And maybe I should really just stick with the purple and silver.
Fair enough.
I was trying to do, like, the joints different colors, and it's sort of a pain in the butt. And also, like, well, the one on the Games Workshop store is just, it's all black with gold highlights in this case, with a bit of, like, other stuff thrown about. It's like, maybe I need to do that. And just, because I'm worried about some of my color choices, and I'm using a lot of paint, and it's expensive paint, and I don't want to use a lot of paint.
Understandable. Alex is here.
Hello.
No tangent to take us down this time, Alex?
Well, you know. None. Zero.
Wow.
So I'm saving my tangents for mid. When you guys are mid-sentence, I'm just going to go off on it, so.
Perfect. We love to see it. And Emily is here.
I'd like to welcome you all to another edition of the Swift Dash Podcast.
Well,
oh, yeah.
We don't have the name anymore, so it doesn't... I was debating... leading it in like that, but I don't think it works as well without the old name, but
the Taylor Swift podcast just does not work, so
we are
the Swift Dash.
We are here to talk about Taylor Swift.
Why did
of course
such a long album?
Yeah,
this
is
longer than Hades Town.
It's true.
Yeah, but it's better.
Fuck off. I will go to blows over this.
I don't know. I think that this, you know, I like Red. I like the album. I don't need a 2-hour version of it, though. I have that one. That's fine. But I understand, you know, she music rights and all that.
No, I agree. I agree that it's too long, and I agree that Red is already an album that is too long, but. It is better than Hades Town. That is just facts.
Yeah,
and
you're way down, Jean-Luc.
And a lot of the From the Vault songs are actually good, which is
the From the Vault songs are like the fucking best songs on the damn album.
I didn't make
well,
it there.
fair enough. I do think that like the standout songs from, you know, Red are by and large better than the From the Vault songs, or at least...
Oh, sure.
I haven't
like
had...
Ronin and Nothing New, like, Message in a Bottle's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed with this. Like,
I like Babe a lot.
I haven't actually listened to the front half of this.
I think that's the way to go, like, actually listening to the new songs rather than, you know, listening to the new... well, quote-unquote new versions of old songs.
Well, the thing is,
the whole thing,
I never listened to the original Red, so this was actually just my first go around.
Well, you know, like 22 and
I knew like two,
back together
three
and,
songs,
you know, things of that nature. Well, if your first time coming to Red is in 2021, that's fine. Red's a good album. It's too long, but the new tracks are really good. I hope you get around to them. I like. Phoebe Bridgers features on Nothing New. It's not like the best Phoebe Bridgers song, but it's a really good Taylor Swift song. So
I interrupted you. What were you going to say earlier?
I don't remember what I was in the process of saying.
I'm sorry.
I'm trying
to figure out if I like, as we're listening to Red back and forth, the original and the new version, I feel like I like the guitar sounds better on the old version. Yeah.
Do you think so?
Yeah, it's got a little more oomph to it. It's got more reverb on it. It sounds bigger.
On the song Red? Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That I thought you meant on the album overall, and I was going to say, like, there's a couple songs on here where I think the guitar actually sounds a lot better, but if the song, yes, I kind of agree with that. But I do like what they did with the chorus on Red, on the Taylor's version of Red. I think by and large, it's a better version of the song, just for me in particular, because she sounds less twangy now, and the twang that Red was the last little vestiges of that, like, country pop twang. And so to me, all the songs sound better without that, but... and it wasn't present on all the songs in the original album, of course.
Yeah, I think that if you did Chad's method of cutting up an album into, you know, songs. But the thing about this one is some of the songs I'd also like to cut up a bit to make up a pitch shorter. So I was going to say that this would be like, I would like it more than the, you know, original Red and everything. But it's very tough. It's cool, though. It's cool that it exists and that we can you know, listen to it and compare it. It's just, it kind of felt like homework when I saw how long it was, and then I started listening to it, and I'm like, you know what, these songs are, a lot of them are bangers, but oof, I'm just gonna listen to the original, I think.
That's fair. I mean, it's
really hard for me to tell which one I like more. I'm not listening to you guys at all, I'm listening to her.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really varies song to song. Like, some of the songs I think are this is the definitive version of them. State of Grace, I think, like the mix on State of Grace is fantastic. I think I Knew You Were Trouble also gets an upgrade here. I think some of the like bangers though, like 22, All Too Well, We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together. Those are songs that are written by a 21-year-old, and so hearing them sung in a, I don't know, what is she, 38 or something now, 36?
She is not.
Jesus Christ, John!
I don't know, she's old. She's like,
she's 32. She's like a couple months older than I am.
Okay, well, okay, fair enough. But it's
she's
been
way more successful.
No.
Well, she's more successful than a lot of people.
She has more money, so if that's your metric, then
yeah, she probably she started with more money, so
yeah,
you know.
She had a yeah. But like, I think that anyway, she's 32. It's been a decade. Those songs I think sound better on the original version, where there's a little bit more, I don't know, youth to her voice. They sound a little bit more naive and sad and raw. I don't think they have
she
that same
feels them in the moment, right? Like now she's looking back on it and like trying to recapture that. It's interesting though, because I was like, is she gonna like try to sing like she did when she was, you know, like 20 or in her early 20s and sort of growing up, or was she gonna be like we're like rebooting this Taylor Swift franchise, we're gonna be self-referential or whatever. Like, it's interesting to see how she's like gone about it. But I mean, you know, obviously it's her trying to have versions of these songs that she owns, so she's
right, which
to
is
as close as possible as where she can.
Yeah, which is why, like, you know, it feels in some moments on the like old songs that she's redoing, there's like almost like an obligatory feel to them of like, yeah, I have to do this, so I own the masters, but it's like, you know, and I don't want to say that like low effort or whatever, because, you know, re-recording the album is going to be hard regardless, but like, I don't know, there is definitely a sort of going through the motions feel to it, which is why I was like really presently surprised when we got to From the Vault songs, which I know like these are songs that have existed for a while, just not in like they were written like at the same time Red was written, but I think like it's a good collection of what are basically B-sides, and without the, and actually benefit from like not having versions of them that have existed before, because it's like, oh yeah, this is the first time I'm hearing these songs. Yeah, and so like you can sort of take them as they are, rather than relative to the original versions of the songs.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if we were living in a world where the first like 8 songs she never released and we're listening to them for the first time now, that'd be like, oh my god, this is really good. This is really good music. And because you don't have those memories or ties to like, oh yeah, she sang this when she was 20, yada 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 yada. But yeah, it's cool that we're getting like it does really feel like a nice director's cut version of like, hey, you like Taylor Swift music, she's re-releasing it, and it's not just the re-release, you're getting a lot of extra stuff. So
yeah, I mean, it's neat. The 10-minute version of All Too Well is
Jakey.
Divisive.
I mean, I said it on Twitter, but she should leave the 10-minute songs to the experts.
You're not the first person I heard to say that.
I don't think she should make a habit of writing 10-minute songs, but I do think the 10-minute version of All Too Well is fantastic.
I also want to acknowledge Alex's Coheed and Cambria joke.
What was his Coheed and Cambria joke?
You said leave it to the professionals, and then Alex said, like, Coheed and Cambria.
Well, Coheed and Cambria don't have any songs longer than 10 minutes. Well, I mean, Final Cut is, but there's, like, a lot of dead air in Final Cut. So, sure, it doesn't really count. I can't talk about, I've talked so much about Coheed and Cambria this week. I need help. Yeah. No, but Chad, I do want you to, and I don't want to, like, put you on the spot or whatever. But I do kind of want to hear the case for the 10-minute version of All Too Well, because I keep trying to like it. I keep going back to it. I watched the music video last night, the short film, and I thought that was really well done. But I just can't. The song just isn't hitting for me. So I'm curious. I don't know if you've thought about it or not. But
I did a little. So I know one of the things that like I get out of Taylor Swift's earlier music is she's such a hyper-emotional person, where I am not.
Sure.
And so I can, like, vicariously experience things through her that I will literally never be able to feel on a personal level. Like, I could not love someone as much as she does and then suffer that kind of heartbreak. It's just, I am not wired for it. And so to have even more of both of those extremes in this song, lyrically, and then just kind of the places it goes musically to, like, offset them, I think works really well and just adds another, a slightly wider depth to it than what it already had. I also think it's a good enough song that just musically, I don't mind staying with it for 10 minutes. Like it doesn't overstay its welcome. And then the kind of like really trash talky bit somewhere in the middle, that was like new lyrically, I really liked. And I kept just thinking like, man, if I could put like a breakdown to this, it would sound fucking kind of gnarly. Cause I'm brain damaged in my own special ways, so that's where I go. But yeah, I really enjoyed what she did with this. I think the original version of All Too Well is also like a fantastic version. I'm not disparaging that.
Yeah, I mean,
I think in some ways releasing the 5-minute version was probably the smarter way to go. Like most things are too long. This album is already too long, and so editing it back is wise, but having, you know, had that song for quite a few years, getting to hear like, hey, this is the original with all the fluff added in, but also, you know, there's, you know, doesn't need to be here, maybe not, but I'm glad I have it. And I do really like the original that she had planned, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, for sure. I do wonder if I would enjoy it more if this version, like lyrically, if this had been the version on the original album, just because it, part of where I bounce off of it is that some of the added verses feel like the way that they come off, they don't sound like they were written. They sound like they were written in 2020, not in
a little bit,
you know. So, and that's the thing that's tough to parse for me. That's one of the things that's tough to parse for me. But it's cool that you like it. You watched the short film, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought the short film was pretty. The thing about the short film and then some of the songs on this album in general, it's like Taylor seems like extremely high maintenance as a person. And the thought of dating her tires me out so much. And I know she was 21 when she's talking about this party that her boyfriend didn't show up to and that broke her heart or whatever. But it's like, girl, it's a fucking birthday party. They're meaningless. So they're
no, I'm sorry.
As meaningful as you make them. And I make them kind of meaningless because I don't care. Like,
I'm sorry. If I ever had a partner that just, like, without warning didn't show up to my birthday party, like, no, like...
Same.
Like, you have to at least say, like, oh, I can't make it or something. Like, I don't know. I didn't watch the short film, but, like, I've been seeing some of the, some people talking about it online, and, like, he just didn't show up. Like, no.
I guess I misinterpreted that because I thought they had already broken up by the time she had her 21st birthday party.
I have no idea. Maybe they did, but
she has a different song on the album. One of the bonus tracks on here, I can't remember which one it is, but she basically calls out, like, this specific example of, like, he said he was going to be here and he didn't show up and ruined her birthday party and she's in the bathroom crying or whatever. And I'm just
he
like,
said he was going to show
have
up.
A drink and get over yourself.
He said he was going to show up and he didn't.
Yeah,
that sucks.
This would bother me a lot less than normal people, but it's also why I can come to this music and get, like, a totally different emotional experience where I'm just like, look at these aliens being upset by things that aren't that important.
No,
to
Chad,
me.
I think it's you who are the alien.
Yeah. Like,
Chad, I watched the Pete Buttigieg movie last night, and
no.
Reminding me of Pete Buttigieg. I hate to say
so
it.
Mean.
I hate to say it.
All I saw was the clip of, I think it's him and his husband.
Chastin,
and
they're like, yeah.
They're like sitting in like a dairy.
Is it the Dairy Queen? Yeah.
Happy date night, and they're both like stone cold, like dead voice, and they like it looks like, oh my god, like they're gonna get divorced tomorrow. It just looks so.
Oh,
it's the clip
if you. If you like that scene, let me tell you, there's like, that's like a third of the movie is just them like sitting in rooms together, having conversations, and it's just being incredibly obvious that these are two people who have a deep-seated hatred for one another. It is insanely funny. It reminds me of that Arthur Chu documentary, actually, in that I am shocked that it was allowed to see the light of day in its current form.
An Arthur Chu documentary.
Oh my! There's an Arthur Chu documentary.
We can talk about that later.
Oh, yeah, it's the Arthur Chu documentary is hilarious. It's really funny, but I didn't really want. I don't want to dwell on the Mayor Pete thing, but I just thought it was a funny.
But yeah, I've only listened to about half of this album because I just didn't have enough time to get through all of it. And it's, I mean, the singles are typically the songs that, like, from the original, that, like, the singles are kind of the ones that I like the most because they sound less twangy. And that's just, I think, something, like, that's part of the sound of this album still in a way that I just don't, it just doesn't work for me. Like I didn't dislike it. It was just like some of this. I'm like, I'm probably not gonna like re-listen to a lot of these songs. Whereas like even when I listened to the like Taylor's version of what was the last one? Fearless. Yeah, like I liked that a lot, and I had not heard a lot of those either. But I don't know. This one probably isn't doing it for me. But I will definitely check out those Vault songs.
I mean, it's definitely just one of those things where it's like, what's on here is not transformative enough to make you like an album you didn't like before, right?
Sure, yeah.
But you never listened to it, Emily, so it's like not that you didn't like
well,
it.
Yeah.
I still probably just wouldn't have been big on it if I had just, like, a week ago gone and listened to the original Red, if, like, this is basically it, but a little more produced.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
At least not bad, just not for me.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Not everything has to be. All right, well, we got about 10 minutes before we have to launch into some comics, so what have you all been up to? What did you come wanting to talk about?
I'm talking music, keeping the music train going. I've been watching Cowboy Bebop, and that opening theme song just slaps so hard.
Good.
It's a banger.
It's just, It's just so good. And, like, Netflix tries to skip it for me. Like, every time it's like...
Rude.
I'm starting the episode at the 1:45 mark. I'm like, no, you're not. No, 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 please. And then I skip back, and then I listen to it again.
I wish they would give you the option to, like, turn it off for a show that it wouldn't skip. Like, I don't mind it for some things, but, like, there are plenty of shows that I really like the theme song and I don't want to skip.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean...
Well, it's the worst when Disney Plus... When Disney Plus tries to skip the intro to The Simpsons, that's like,
oh, criminal.
That pisses me off. But anyway, Disney Plus.
But yeah. Yeah, so I'm like, I don't know, 8 or 9 episodes in, so not too far. But I last two nights I've been watching it, and my dad's walked into the room at the time when the theme song's going on, and he's got a few guitars, he likes playing music, and he just like sat there and was like, whoa, and then he like watches the whole episode, then he leaves, and then the next day it's on again, he walks in, he watches the whole episode, then he leaves. So it's been nice. Watching two episodes of Cowboy Bebop with my dad.
Are you going to watch the Netflix one when it comes out?
Yeah, I think I'm going to try to finish the animated first and then then do that. Yeah, I don't know. It's a cool show. It's very enjoyable. And like, it's not even just the theme song. Like, the whole show just has this great musical flair to it. That's just, and visual flair and great voice acting. Yeah. I mean, it's not, I don't think it's a new thing in the universe to say Cowboy Bebop's great, but I'm gonna scream it anyway, you know?
It's always worth repeating.
Oh, for sure.
Yay. Chad, I want you to tell me about Centaur World, please.
Centaur World is a cartoon Emily wanted me to watch, and she talks about it a lot, and I was like, oh dear, what are we in for this time? And the answer is a lot. It's very strange. I would describe this cartoon as a mix of Charlie the Unicorn, Adventure Time, and then weird Adult Swim bullshit. And it's almost too much, but hasn't quite... Oh, it's also a musical. Because it's unconscious.
Holy fuck.
I forgot to tell Chad it was a musical.
But the premise of it and the execution of it is just good enough where I'm like, I kind of want to see where it goes. Because it's like, what if someone got isekai'd, but instead of like the human, it was the horse? And the horse is like, I gotta get back to my rider, but also I'm in like literally candy-colored hell because everyone around me is so incompetently stupid and sweet, and I want to murder all of them. Also, apparently we're singing now. Like,
that kind of sounds like I Hate Fairyland.
A little bit, but like obviously way less vulgar. It's definitely like aimed
this is
for
why,
kids, but with like an asterisk.
This is Y7, but honestly, I really like the only explanation I have for it is that it is specifically targeted at adults that like animated cartoons, and they had to pitch it as a kid's cartoon so that it didn't have to be an adult cartoon.
There's
because adult cartoon adult cartoons have a much different vibe.
It's one of those things. It reminds me of Yuri Kuma in that I feel like I'm not totally sold yet, but I think it's doing everything for a purpose and the execution's good enough where I want to keep going. But like half the times I'm watching an episode, I'm just kind of bewildered by what's on screen or by like the weird shit that the characters are doing or saying, because it's kind of got that LOL random aesthetic to it a little bit, but not like over the top where I'm immediately, you know, turned off, but it's there. And it's very strange, but it's been an experience so far. I ended up watching an episode all drunk last night. That was kind of fun.
And it just got renewed for a second season. Well, I say renewed, the second season has been announced and it comes out next month, and I've been riding that emotional high for several days now.
I like how everything is literally a centaur.
Everything is a centaur. The tornado is a centaur. The trees are centaurs. The grass is centaurs. Everything is centaurs.
It is a bizarre. Someone was really high when they came up with most of this, and it shows.
I love it.
But I don't know. So far, I guess I would probably recommend it. Maybe like I'm only two episodes in, but I'm engaged. I am like really, really curious where it's gonna go.
First season is like 10 or 13 episodes, something like that.
Yeah, it's not very long.
No. I'm excited. Do we have time for John to talk about Ava?
I can talk about Ava for like 5 minutes.
I watched the first 30 minutes of this movie last night because I meant to watch all of it in preparation for you talking about it, and then I forgot.
Yeah, so I watched the second Ava rebuild, finally. I know I'm, like, right on time for this, but... Oh my god, that thing is fucking terrible. I don't understand, like... people have been talking, because the last one came out earlier this year, and people have been constantly, like, hyping up these rebuilds and, like, how good they are. But, man, Ava 2.0 is, like, one of the worst movies, one of the worst things I've ever forced myself through. Just, like, I know that it's Hideaki Anno who does it, so, like, it's hard to say it bastardizes the source material, but it, considering he also made the source material...
No, I'll agree with you there. The amount of fan service is really, I only watched half an hour and it was so much, even though I do kind of like this movie, or I like scenes in it, and if I go long enough without rewatching it, that convinces me that I like this movie.
Yeah. The thing is, like, yeah, sure, like, the imagery in the last, like, 20, 30 minutes or so is really potent. like, when he's pulling Rey out of the Ava, like, that, sure, like, there's something to that is, like, that is really powerful. But honestly, Shinji in the original Ava, like, he is just a total nothing character. Like, he, not a nothing character, but, like, he takes no actions. Like, he has no agency over what happens. He just sort of, like, you know, the adults make the decisions, and all of them make awful decisions for him, and he just mostly rolls with them because, like, he is petrified of not having the approval of his father. And they make him into, like, almost the opposite of that in this movie, where he is, like, much more the master of his own destiny. And I feel like it is, I don't know. I did not like him in this movie. I did not like, it also just, like, there's so much subtlety to the original Ava. And I know that, like, a lot is made about, like, all the crazy shit that goes off the rails in the last six episodes and the end of Ava and shit. But, like, for me, what really makes Ava work is, like, the characters and, like, the character development that happens over the course of the show. And a lot of that is done very subtly. Like, you have to – it's a show where you have to be pretty dialed in all the time to pick up on it. Mm-hmm. And this movie just, like, beats you over the head with that shit. It's like the Rey thing where she looks out the window and says to herself, "Wow, that's the first time I've ever felt gratitude in my life. I feel gratitude for the first time." Like, come on, man. Like, that is, like, something, like, the arc of Rey going from, like, basically just thinking of herself in the same way that Gendo Ikari thinks of her as basically just a means to an end and essentially, like, a bioweapon to somebody who, like, actually has agency and, you know, believes that other people can care about her in ways that are beyond her utility in the Human Instrumentality Project. Like, it is so well done in the original show, and here it is just the most ham-fisted bullshit.
And part of that
it's
that,
like, so anime to me. Like, it's so anime.
They're trying to cram an entire arc into a very small segment of a movie, and that's a mistake. Yeah. They should have tried to rework stuff or, like, just not driven it in so hard.
And I know that the next two movies go, like, this movie is different, but, like, the next two I know
go off, are banana pants.
Right, but, like, you don't need, they basically do try to adapt 15 episodes of the show into this, like, 2.5 hour movie, which is such a huge
actually
mistake.
This movie is not 2.5 hours. It's Isn't actually it? Like it no I mean
no, this
unless
pretty long
I feel like it, sorry, I me, remember it pull, being less than that.
Let me pull it up. I've I got it on my on my hard drive. It is a long fucking movie. The first one is short. The first one is like 90 minutes. But this is
2.0 is an hour 48.
Evangelion 2.22 is an hour. Mine is an hour 52. I guess it's okay. Not 2.5 hours. Jesus Christ. It fucking felt like it.
Okay. I did think it was under 2 hours, if just kind of barely.
Yeah. So technically it is under 2 hours. Also, they completely write out my boy Toji.
Justice like, for Toji.
Almost entirely. And, okay, the last thing I'm going to say, the fact that Asuka is piloting the Ava when they use the dummy switch is... It is way less impactful than if Toji were piloting when Toji's piloting the other Ava.
I agree.
Specifically because, like, of the Ava pilots, Asuka is the only one who actually wants to be there.
Yeah.
And there's this element of, like, she actually, like, goes into the situation willingly, right? Mm-hmm. When Toji gets fucking obliterated by Unit 1, like, he is a character who has no choice in the matter. And that is, like, the ultimate tragedy of it, right? And also, like, Shinji's relationship with Asuka is very different than his relationship with Toji, even in the movie where Toji gets very little screen time. Mm-hmm. Where, like, it's just more... I don't know. It just hits harder that it's, you know, his best friend that has no... that also has no control over his life. I don't know. It's just a total mess. It's a total fucking mess. So, I'll watch the next one, and we'll see. But...
The one...
Hopes are not high.
...thing I like most in this movie is probably... sometimes I'll put this movie on just long enough to get 10 minutes in so I can watch Asuka's introduction sequence and then just, like, turn it off. Because, like, the whole, like, scene where she, like, her Ava drops out of the plane and she, like, does the big fight. And then she, like, is, like, standing on top of that thing and, like, lecturing at them because they're all fucking dumb boys. Oh, it's just so fun, and it's so funny, and it's, like, I know that it's, like, Asuka fan service, whatever. I don't care. I'm fine with it.
It's a good scene. I mean, like, it's not, like, there's plenty of weirder Asuka fan service.
There's plenty of worse Asuka fan service that I hate.
Me too. So that scene is fine. Very stylish. I do not mind that scene at all.
And I think that sort of encapsulates, like, I promise I'm done, but it sort of encapsulates what I like about these films is that they get to take things I do like about the series and make them, like, crazy, like, wild animation and, like, stuff, but then, like, some of the writing is just like, what the fuck are you trying to do here? But yeah, that's my final thoughts on that.
Also, Emily, you saw John Mulaney last week, but weren't allowed to talk about it.
Yeah,
you want to do that real quick?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. I got a T-shirt that said, I saw him when he got out of rehab, which is extremely good. A lot of the set was about, like, his stint in rehab and, like, his recovery and stuff, but it was very funny, and I really look forward to it being on Netflix as an inevitable Netflix special. Also, have you guys heard about this thing called... This is relevant to the John Mulaney thing. Have you guys heard of this thing called, like, Yonder? Y-O-N-D-R?
God, why do I know that name?
It's a new service that, like, artists and comedians are using with their shows, where in order to keep people off of their phones or being able to use their phones at all, when you get to the venue, you are required to put your phone in, like, this pouch that locks with a magnet, and you are only able to unlock it at the end of the show by going to, like, a person working there who has, like, the thing that undoes the magnet so that you can use your phone after you leave.
That sounds horrible. Yeah, if they ever tried to do that to me at a show, I would leave. I'm not even kidding. That is fucking terrible.
I managed to conceal my phone in my bag, and like they were just going so quickly through like looking through people's bags that they just didn't notice that it was hidden under a bunch of tampons. So I didn't have to put my phone in a thing, but Gwen did have to end up surrendering theirs.
Yeah, that's like a very, I mean, I assume it's pretty widespread. When I went to LA last year and went to Jimmy Kimmel, it was like, yeah, they had the pouch there and they were like, give us your phones. And I'm like, I don't really want to see Jimmy Kimmel that much. It's like,
I had not heard of this before, but, I got like an email before the show that said it was a no cell phones show. And I was like, what the fuck does that mean? So I did some Googling, and someone from like a previous John Mulaney show, sort of explained all the deets.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that's because they don't want anything of the, you know, the set to leak or anything. But.
Well, I mean, Dave Chappelle is also doing it, so, you know, make of that what you will.
Honestly, I don't have an issue with that. I've been to enough shows where I wish people would put their fucking phones away and just, like, watch the thing in front of them.
I just think that, like, with a comedy show, you could just have, like, if someone's on their phone, like, have an usher or somebody
also,
come and take them out.
It's a security risk. Like, making it so that nobody can you can't contact people, like, come on,
like,
yeah, that's not
like
an elegant way to go about
fucking,
it.
What security risk.
If someone
what?
Walks in with a gun suddenly, what are you gonna do? Like,
well, what
you can't even call the police.
Yeah, like some
what you can do. I mean, this obviously wouldn't work for a gun situation, but like if you did like. During, like, if you went to the bathroom and needed to use your phone, like, I think they had someone that you could go to and, like, temporarily unlock it and then, like, lock it back before you went inside, but...
Seems like a bad system to me.
You know, I didn't love it, and that's why I tried to get around it, and it successfully did. I also didn't like not being able to tell what time it was for most of the time I was there, because I wasn't allowed to look at my phone.
Yeah.
Because I have no sense of time.
Yeah. Well... You want to talk about some comic books now?
Yeah.
Cool. There were a decent chunk of good comics this week. So does anybody have anywhere they would like to start in particular?
May's book is really good. I got caught up this week.
Oh, nice.
Had
you not read any of it, or did you read the first issue but not the second?
I accidentally missed the second issue because I couldn't remember which one May's book was.
Oh,
and you
right.
guys are like, it's that Jeff Lemire book that's really good. And I was like, oh, yeah. I like the Jeff Lemire books that are really good. I should probably get caught up. So I did that today. That book is just beautiful. What an amazing story so far.
Yeah, it really is. I really loved – I also really loved this – I mean, I loved the first two issues as well. But I loved this issue a lot as well.
Yeah.
The scene where he goes and finally talks to – inevitably talks to his neighbor about it is very well done. I love the sequence of panels where he is, like, sitting with his back to the alley wall.
Ooh, so good.
Yeah, it's just, like – it's one of those things where you just, like – it's the same panel, I think, repeated 6 or 8 times. I can't remember if it's 3 or 4 times per page. But it's just like you just can feel the sort of like anguish coming off of it. It's really fucking good. I love this issue.
There's a doggy now, and I think the doggy will talk, and that makes me really
happy. I think
happy.
The dog did talk.
Yeah.
He talked in a dream. He hasn't talked in real life yet, but it's also kind of hard to tell what's real and what isn't at this point. I mean, he kind of just spent all day in a dank alley, like, imagining things.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Yeah. This book continues to be dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just really happy that, like, we sort of had a thing after Gideon Falls ended where we weren't getting many Jeff Lemire books, and now we're up and rolling where it's like, oh, there's like multiple Jeff Lemire series and more on the way, and it's
we didn't have any because he was busy working on these.
Yeah, no, I guess that's how like making things works, but as someone who just reads comics, I just get angry when there's no Jeff Lemire. I get sad, I don't get angry. And he even did a Robin and Batman that he released the same week as a trade paperback called Robin and Batman and another kid, but it was kind of confusing to find it.
Wait, really? There was another thing with the same title?
Yeah, it was like a YA one. Well, it's Robin and Batman and, like, Carl or something. It's like Robin and Batman and the kid or something. Okay. And it's, but when I searched on the Curse site, that's the only one that came up.
Weird.
Oh, weird.
I put in the old ampersand.
Yeah, well, yeah, it is.
Got the good old, got the good old book of Batman and Robin, which is the Ascender creative team. We got Dustin Nguyen and Jeff Lemire.
It is. It is amazing to me how much this comic is attempting to rewrite All-Star Batman and Robin. Like, I just reading through it and reading the relationship, it's like, oh, I get it. Jet Lemire is trying to do the, like, you know, antagonistic Batman and Robin relationship where, like, you know, they don't actually, like, really get along with each other, but, you know, doing it without all the weird baggage of All-Star Batman and Robin.
Which is fair, because, you know, that's a standalone masterpiece.
Oh, well, exactly. It ends up being something, like, obviously very different because of that. Because, like, totally this is not All-Star Batman and Robin.
But for a bit there, like, at the beginning when you're like, oh, it's the same sort of thing where Batman's like,
get in the damn car!
You gotta be cold-blooded!
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and then they're just sitting there in silence, and it's like, is he going to say the R word now, or is he going to wait, or what's going on with that? I'm very excited to see where the series goes, because I think I know where the series goes in terms of, like, Dick Grayson. Because, I mean, Dick Grayson as a character is sort of this, like, bright, you know, not Batman, but, like, you know, not the opposite. I don't know. He's a bright force, and I'm just like, oh my god, Killer Croc and him are going to become friends, and I'm very excited. They're going to have this bond.
Killer Croc's been doing really well this year.
He has.
It's his year. Oh.
You're the Croc, baby.
Really? Yeah. He ain't no Croc of shit.
True. And when he showed up and he was like, hello, I thought that they were just going to talk, and then they started fighting, and I'm like, oh, they're not going to have a nice friendship. But then at the end, you get like some flashbacks kind of thing.
Oh my god, they were childhood best friends.
Like, they were like friends or like adjacent to each other.
Yeah,
Croc was really sad and had no family, and you know, Dick Grayson had his parents who are now gone, and it's like, oh, it's cool. And Dustin Nguyen's sort of like painterly, shadowy, like, flashbacks are just really nice.
Well, I love that the monologue from Dick Grayson's diary that opens the beginning, as it's like, you know, Dick Grayson doing the fighting crime, is the same monologue that closes the book, except instead of like it being about Dick Grayson, it's about Killer Croc. It's a really good moment. And you know what? I love Killer Croc in his fucking trench coat and his hat, just go into the fucking festival fairgrounds. It's sad. It's good stuff.
Yeah, and also Batman reading his diary. I really liked Batman's whole like, oh, I made you a costume based on the designs in your private journal, and it's like he doesn't see that that's wrong, and it's I love that moment because he's like, it's like, Batman, you're like, you're not okay, dude. You're like not picking up on these signs, and you're I enjoyed the first issue.
Yeah, it's a decent first issue. For sure.
I don't know what it's doing. Like I said, it's fine. I enjoyed it because Jeff Lemire is a good writer and the guy drawing is a good artist. I didn't get a lot out of it other than, oh, it was like a good take on Batman and Robin. Yeah. Like, you know, this is, it exists and it's better than a lot of takes on Batman and Robin by default. So that's cool.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. What about one of the other takes on Batman in Batman the Imposter, issue number 2? How did you like that take on, well, not Robin, but Batman, Chad?
I still like this. I don't know, there's something about the way Batman is written in this that I'm finding really compelling. Yeah. Like, he's got just enough, like, human to him, you know, falling for the detective kind of, but then also, like, putting the case first and basically kicking her at, you know, stealing a dude who he's, I think, waterboarding. Like, he's still got that, like, insanity of, like, man, Batman's kind of fucked up. He probably should find a better way to deal with his mental issues than beating up poor people. But also, there's a little more, like, hope on top. Like, it's like a weird Oreo cookie where he's got the dark stuff, but then he's got a gooey center now. That tastes good, and I like. I kind of like it. I like. There's almost like a lighter touch with how he's written that I think is working really well.
Yeah, that whole scene in the diner where he goes with the detective, I think is really great. It's also like, you know, it's a younger Batman, so it's before he like fully puts up the persona, but it is nice to see him, you know, vulnerable in that way. But then, you know, totally flip it on its head, because in some ways this is a more brutal Batman, and that is sort of put into perspective by the reveal at the beginning of this issue, which is that he didn't have Alfred growing up. That in this universe, Alfred like quit his job rather than deal with Bruce Wayne, which understandable, fair enough. But like you see that sort of play itself out in like, you know, him being a, you know, like, not that Batman isn't brutal normally, but like, you know, the Batman that we know probably wouldn't waterboard somebody. That's very much a like, you know, Batman reptilian kind of move. He also probably wouldn't like roundhouse kick the detective. Like, you know, you'd be nicer about it. But anyway, so you see the brutality play itself out there, but you also see the like, oh yeah, he there's still that like kid that's inside him that never really grew up. Also, the page where they're like out in the rain, him and the detective are out in the rain, and it's all in black and white except for the detective's umbrella and her shirt, and there's all the bats in the background, and they're like leaning into each other about to kiss, is so beautiful. Fucking Andrea Sorrentino is just built so different. It's honestly unfair.
It's a 41 page book, and like I'd say 99% of the pages are like, oh, I like that on my wall. It's just like, I don't know. No, I'm not going to say why does anyone else ever make art, but I'm saying like, man, if you're like an up and coming artist and you're like, oh, like, you know, what comic should I look at in terms of like thing? Like, check out Andrea Sorrentino's stuff. And obviously we know he uses the color red a lot and it's like his thing, but it works so well. And the way he like, the way he breaks down panels, like, this is such a far, far cry from like, because I remember reading the New 52 and there was that one issue where you had to like turn the book around, and I thought that was like fantastic. It was Greg Capullo, and I still think it's very good, but this is like, every page is like that. Every page has something where you're like, oh my gosh, this is so cool, and it all somehow still comes together where it's like legible and it's not just like pretty art on a page. So
yeah, it's like, it looks really good, but it is also really effective, like, sequential storytelling, right? The panels within panels, calling attention to specific stuff is, like, such a cool touch. More artists probably do stuff like that. It's a good... I'm really digging this.
Yeah, it's good.
Gonna put two Batman comics on my end of the year top 10 list. What the fuck?
You know what else is going on that list is Mammo.
Hold on.
Probably
hold on.
Fucking facts, actually.
Hold on, I have a joke. I have a joke for this one.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mammo number 5.
Have you?
No, she's right.
I've been excited about this all morning. Don't take this from me, John.
All of human history has led up to this point.
Anyway, yeah, this book fucking whips. You know, it has been good from start to finish. It is gonna be on my top 10 of the year, if it's not my number 1 of the year. So good. No complaints.
As I was reading this, I read this early in the week, and there's a moment in the book where I'm like, oh yeah, Emily got her wish. Emily got what she wanted.
I was reading this like, if they don't kiss, I'm gonna yell.
Yeah,
And they did.
It was good. It is a really good ending to the story, I think.
Yeah.
It is like a, like, it just really, I mean, there's still sort of like, there's not even really like super loose ends. It's just like, they wrap everything up in a way that is like really clean, but actually feels very fitting. The
story's over, but it keeps going.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And most of it is like wrapping up the relationship between the two characters. Like, they deal with Mammo, I think, in the first 15 pages, and it's a 40-page issue. So most of it is, like, them, the two main characters, like, sort of figuring out where they fit in the world and also, like, where they fit in each other's lives. And It's all just like felt. It's sort of like there's nothing that's unpredictable here. Like you sort of could see all of it coming. But I actually, but I think that that's like really a testament to how well like this series has built to this conclusion. I really like it. And I still really just love the way that like the magic works in this world, and the way that like
so good.
They can just like sort of give it to one another, and that I thought was really good. But yeah, I thought this wrapped up really well for sure.
Yeah, I loved it. It was just a lovely, sweet comic.
Everything I've said about it throughout the couple months, right, like, still stands. I really like the fantasy. I like the setting. I think the character writing is really good. I like the artwork. It's cute. It's got just enough kind of... It's got that Boom stuff, but a little different. It sets it apart. Like, it's a really well-executed, really good comic book.
It's absolutely a Boom comic, but, like, that's not always a bad thing.
Nah.
It's a very good Boom comic.
What'd you guys think of What's the Furthest Place from Here?
Well, what is the furthest place from here?
I don't know.
It's great that they did a triple size first issue, presumably so that they can actually set everything up really well. And like actually have time to like set up the world and the characters without in one issue rather than, you know, cramming it full of exposition. And so I'm really glad that they did that in a way that, like, you know, I think worked pretty well. And also we got to the end of this issue and I'm like, yeah, I feel like I have a sense for the world and the characters, and
yeah, I don't know if I like them, but it's done the work, right? Like, it's kind of there's no adults allowed for some reason, and you get to a certain age, you maybe start bleeding in your nose or your mouth or something like that. There's these creepy masks, which I always love those staple, kind of like the Umbrella Academy.
Very good.
Very nice. Very creepy. But I thought it flowed very well. Like, it was an oversized issue, but I wasn't ever like, oh god, what's the next page? Like, people talked like very, very believably, very, very normally. It's just, I don't know if I really care about any of them, and if this is a, hey, we're just setting the tone here, and now we're going to get into the meat going forward, that's cool, and I'll be there for issue two.
Yeah, that's sort of how I came away from it as well, is like, it's a book that is very technically competent, like, it's well written and well drawn, and I like the style that it's drawn in. I think some of the coloring is fantastic, just the way that like the characters are shaded and different lighting is really good. But I was just like kept just holding out for something to really like grasp onto and never quite got there, either in terms of like one of the protagonists or some kind of a mystery. There is a mystery of like, you know, what is like in terms of what is actually going on, but I just like kept waiting for that thing that really sold me on it.
No, I absolutely agree.
And it was just missing.
I didn't dislike this comic. In fact, it has a lot of elements that are things that I like, but I'm glad that it got all of this out of the way in one issue, because if I did have to read, like, more than one setup issue for this, I feel like I would be more likely to kind of fall off. But, it's not like I disliked it to the point that I'm gonna not read another issue, but I also just sort of, like, got to the end and I was kind of like, okay...
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I am not sure how to feel about it, but I'm going to keep going. So,
what did you think, Chad, as the person who set this all up?
I think I'm a bit higher on this than you guys are. I really had a lot of fun with this.
Nice.
I think the first page is just like a really captivating way to start a comic. guy spitting out his
tooth. See, we all know that people removing teeth from their mouth is very cool because Romulus did it. So yeah. That's how you know it's fucking epic.
So that, and then leading into, like, I don't know, trying to build this weird kind of, like, gang culture these kids have that are living in this record store. I was really into that. Them heading out, and then it's like, oh, okay, we're doing some Children of the Corn thing where there are no adults and the kids are mucking about. That can be kind of fun. I like the take on it here. Just there's almost a, I don't want to say Mad Max, but there's a certain wasteland vibe I'm getting to.
Yeah.
This town that really is, it's dreary, it's dirty, it's weird, it's grimy.
This has been going on for a while.
Yeah. So there's like a history here. And then, I don't know, it's just like, I think it did a really good job kind of setting its tone, setting its world, and then building a mystery that I wanted answers for. I think it maybe could have used, like, one more big hook page, kind of like that first one, that, like, you're like, oh, what the fuck, kind of things. It really only has, it has a couple of small moments like that, but it doesn't have, like, that big, big one that you maybe want out of a first issue. But I also think everything else is just executed so well that I'm really excited to see where this goes. I'm very captivated.
And I think the big moments are, like, kind of understated, like when she shoots the guy and he just kind of, like you see the blood,
yeah,
the shirt, and everyone reacts kind of really, like, chill to it, kind of thing, and they're like, oh, okay, well, I guess we're gonna leave now. It's like, oh, like it kind of helps give a better sense for the world and what's normal and death and getting shot. And there's also the guy who was apparently dead on the table who's got up and walked away, so it's interesting.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I've really liked this creative team in the past, so I'm excited to, like, I'm definitely sticking with it on that alone. So hopefully there's more for me later on. Let's see. What did you guys get around to regarding the matter of Oswald's body, number one?
I did.
Nice.
Yep.
Okay. This is obviously my shit. When you get to the end and Jack Ruby is just fucking sitting there, I'm like, oh, I'm fucking in for this. But this is mostly just like a setup issue. Like, it is a lot of setup, and basically nothing else. But I think that it does a decent enough job in each of these, like, little 5 or 6 page vignettes, of just, like, setting up the characters that are being pulled together on this team to find Lee Harvey Oswald and then presumably frame him for the assassination of JFK. which, that's all true, by the way. I mean, like, these aren't real people. That's all true, by the way. It's very much like, you know, I feel like it does a good job of, like, establishing who those people are, and I'm into it. And also, look, man, next issue, everyone knows who GB is, man. Everyone knows George Bush killed JFK. You can unredact that. You can just say it. It's 2021. We can all agree on this.
It's a really good setup issue as far as, like, building a team for a heist or something,
yeah,
right? Like, we all kind of know what it's like to go through those motions.
Like a conspiracy theory Avengers.
Yeah, I think this one does it really well, though, and the characters are all, like, fairly engaging for the minimal page space they are offered, which is really hard to pull off. Like I think, like, the writing in here is really smartly done. Artwork's cool. Hook's kind of fun. So yeah, I had fun with this. I didn't like the paragraphy bits at the beginning and end. I could have done without those. I don't know if they really added much.
Sure. No, that's fair. I wasn't sure if that was going to be, like, a consistent thing, and I'm glad it wasn't, because the book actually has the book is actually, like, the actual comic book is a lot better. So, but yeah. Alex, did you like this?
I did, but I would like to take this moment to say I read Human Target last week. Okay. Good friend Tom.
Oh
yeah. All I want
to
say.
Do we have to talk about Tom King comics?
No. But just give me this 10 seconds. It has Max Lord in it, the Justice League International, and the number 12. So I'm very psyched. It's very good.
Okay.
That's it.
It's got nothing on this book, honestly. Though I read that too. I don't really remember what happened.
We can talk about it when issue 2 comes out.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, I thought this was a solid first issue. I'm looking forward to more.
Six sidekicks ended. Well, yeehaw. I think. Maybe. It seems like they may be setting up for something else, but this was like the end of the current story, as far as I can tell. I didn't read whatever was at the end, so I don't know if it's going to keep going or not, but it seemed like the ending.
There's no more
six
sidekicks. Well, I mean, unless they do another like spinoff series or whatever, but this is the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was all right. I feel like I've been the highest on this book, probably, of all of us.
Yeah, it was a fine enough ending. I guess I don't know if I wanted more out of it, but if I did, I didn't get it. But it served its purpose. It was kind of fun. I don't know if I like them like becoming movie stars at the end.
I thought it was pretty funny. That
almost undermines some of the stuff they're going through.
I thought that the cut from like them trying to make the decision to them becoming movie stars was really funny. Even though
it was funny,
I don't disagree with you, Chad. There is sort of on a thematic level, it does sort of undermine some of that.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's been kind of a fun Saturday morning kind of cartoon of a comic book. I definitely like enjoyed reading it. I'll probably forget it exists like a month from now, and that's okay too. Like I had some fun with it though.
Yeah. And then at the end of the book there's an ad for Redneck number 32, which I think is the last issue or last arc. Is Redneck already done?
Mike? Redneck's not done, no. It's just hasn't come out in a while.
So but number 32 is at the end of this book. There's a page that says the most shocking Redneck story ever. So
You won't believe what'll happen next.
Is issue 31 out?
I assume it must be if 32 is in the back of this book.
Well, it doesn't look like it is.
Well, then they fucked up.
All right, cool.
What about the goddamn Jonker?
What about the goddamn Jonker?
It's bad.
What? You don't like the twist that the Joker this whole time has been involved in a Jeffrey Epstein-style adrenochrome harvesting?
No, I like that part. That's my favorite part of the whole book.
Okay, yeah. I was gonna say, me too.
Genuinely.
No, I'm being genuine also.
The front half where it's like Batgirl talking and like to Pennyworth, and then like the end where they're like, wait a minute, the knife thrown was by the Court of Owls and the DNA on it is from your dead son. What about that? And it's like, okay, what is this anymore? What even? Give me the Gordon and give me the Joker.
You know what my favorite part of this book was? When this book felt the need to recap the events of several other very well-known Batman comics.
Have you heard of the Joker's joke? It's canon now. Yeah.
That was the best part of this comic. Actually, no, you're right. The best part was the cloning. I did, when there was the reveal of all the attempted Joker clones, I did kind of wish that, to bring this back to Evangelion, they were all kind of floating together in one big tank, because that would have been funnier to me. But, no, this whole thing was,
also, he
parts
says,
of this book was very funny.
He says the Joker's clones are gruesome to behold, but, like, they just have two heads. One of them has four arms. They're not
gruesome.
They're not nearly gruesome enough.
I feel like there was
if you saw that in real life, you'd be like, that's pretty fucked.
If I saw the Joker in real life, I would be like, yeah, that's probably not good for me. But he's not real. He can't hurt me.
I actually thought some of this book was kind of funny, but overall, it's just very dumb.
It's like an Oreo, but instead of a, you know, it's got a nice middle. but instead of cookies on either side, it's shit.
I still don't get why we keep going back to this Texas Chainsaw Massacre family. Like, they keep, I know that they have, like, played into some recent Batman stuff, but, like, they keep showing up, and I just keep being...
I didn't know who this person was. She just broke into the room and was all, like...
Yeah, she's like, Leatherface's daughter, but, you know, legally distinct Leatherface, I guess.
Yeah, of course.
I didn't know anything about this either.
Yeah, she's been in this comic before, like, 4 issues ago, but...
Okay, but, like, I didn't know anything about her then, either.
That's fair. Her dad is legally distinct Leatherface.
Yeah, legally distinct. Did you guys read Legally Distinct Venom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not Ram V's best showing.
Nah, he co-writing. I liked, there was a good scene where Eddie Brock comes home to his son. And then he's like, oh, okay, cool. And then he gets a call from his real dad, and it's like,
that's not your dad, bro. Oh, that was actually pretty good. That reveal was pretty good
for me. There's a creepy villain that disappears and is like, I'm going to kill everyone you love.
A lot of this book's kind of dumb.
But there was a lot of superhero bullshit.
It's so much like, oh, yeah, did you read King in Black? And I'm like, no, I didn't. And then the book is like, let me explain all of King in Black to you. And I'm like, if I wanted to read King in Black, I would have read King in Black. Like, leave me alone. But of course, you know, it's Marvel, so they have to tie it into.
This is why we don't read Marvel books on this show.
I mean, this was the problem. This is why, like, we didn't read DC books for a long time, too, is because, like, they're so tied into each other that they have to exposition dump you. A number one is like just an exposition dump because, you know, it is a sequel to 5 different things. And I like, it's just, it was just grating and hard to read, and I don't know, like the whole like time thing where Eddie Brock is like, I control all the symbiotes. What if I can control the symbiotes in a different time period? Is like superhero bullshit that would be cool, but this is not a cool book. I don't know. It also just like, it looks really boring. Like, just from an art perspective, I think it's Brian Hitch, Brian Hitch, which is just like, I don't know. It's very stereotypical superhero art that is not fun to look at ever.
Brian Hitch does stereotypical superhero art, and then he like copies his own drawings, and then just keeps going. It's fun.
Yeah,
it's great. But Phenom X came out, and they said the word Apex in it. So
that's we're at an hour 8.
We're ending it. Yeah, I didn't realize.
They also said the word scent instead of the word send, and it was grammatically incorrect, and it was the first word of the book, and it was like.
Alright.
Good catch, Alex.
Alright, Alex. Cool. They should hire you to copy edit for them.
Yeah, okay. I'm gonna get on that top cow.
Alright, we can wrap it up there. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Comics Podcast. We'll be back. God, my throat just... Sorry, I had to mute myself so I could cough. Anyway... we'll be back next week. Until then, you can find the Comics Podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Comics Podcast on Twitter and the Comics Podcast with a the on Facebook. Chad, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Anonym Band, Anonum. That is my music project. I have new music on Bandcamp at anonym.bandcamp.com. And if you want to read my short stories, you can go to anonym.wordpress.com. If you want to read my books, you can go to Amazon.com and search Chad Waller. All 3 should show up within the first couple searches. I do all sorts of things. So, yeah, have fun with those.
Cool. Emily, where can people find you?
If you would like to find me, take a bundle of twigs out into the woods, sprinkle them with your mother's finest spices, light it a fire, and speak into those flames, revolutionary girl Utena. And you will see where to find me in the resulting smoke.
That's fantastic.
Alex, where can people find you?
I just hope it works. I don't know. I've decided to leave Twitter because it. I don't know. So I don't know. Come to my house.
Oh, what's your address?
Yeah, the address is I was about to say my address, but like one number different, and I'm like, oh, that doesn't solve the problem of you revealing your address. But I live in Wisconsin. Look me up.
All right, cool. You can find me at Mountain Dew Liquor on Twitter. We will be back next week. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.